and welcome back to Forecast News with Millie and Afshin, the only show that helps you to fill your calendar with all the important events and anniversaries coming up in the week ahead around the world. Some will make the headlines in the mainstream media and some will go very much under the radar, and that's why we're here. So as always, let's go straight to the first day of the week, Monday, which actually...
Do I not get to say anything?
What?
Okay, okay. 4th of December.
Hang on, Afshin, because I was going to tell you a fun fact about Monday. Okay. So Monday, Afshin, actually translates to Moon's Day according to the Anglo-Saxon word from which the name derives, and it's thought to come from the ancient Roman practice of naming each day of the week after a celestial object. You're very welcome for that piece of information. If you take nothing away from today...
Lunacy. I'm sure that the Greek names come back from somewhere and some other culture deep, buried in time, very far from the Mediterranean cultures of Greece, though. But maybe that wasn't in your history book. Hope you didn't get it from Google.
Well, thank you for that contribution. But yes, Monday 4th of December. Now, first thing, unsurprisingly, the UN is conducting yet another Security Council on the Middle East in New York. Obviously, they'll be discussing the so-called Palestine question. We hear so much about the Palestine question, of course, but never the Palestine answer. And I don't know if you're going to this Security Council today, Afshin, but I really feel like, obviously, there are so many complexities to this and there are so many historical factors that have led us to this point. And you can go back centuries to really find the starting point to all this. But as we mentioned a few weeks ago, really the catalyst for the current conflict dates back to 1947, and it was the UN and member states who voted and decided to give the Jewish people their own state, effectively, after World War II.
Wait, what do you mean 1947? Do you condemn Hamas?
Huh?
You're not allowed to say that on media in NATO countries.
True, isn't it?
Everything, history began on October the 7th, and if you don't agree with that, then... Well, I know, but the point is, you know, I think I should call... Let's see if I can do this. Yeah, that is, you know, getting the authorities to immediately arrest you for presumably being part of Hamas, for even bringing up the idea there's a historical context. Look what happened to UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres. He did that kind of thing that you just did. And
well, I do think you're allowed to not bring up the context, but... As we say, the UN is really the direct reason or the cause of the current conflict. Whether I'll get, you know, arrested later down the line for saying that, I don't know.
But why do you think it is then that what you said is so contentious when in or anything in human history, you normally look at history, don't you? And you don't just go, oh, this happened in a vacuum and suddenly happened and all events...
I think it's
difficult
for us. Well, but this is what I said at the start, was the history and the complexities to this are so deep and so vast that I don't think we could discuss it in this quick conversation. But I suppose
there's no complexity with genocide, though. There is no complexity with genocide.
Well, if we go back to the original point, which is the UN that having the Security Council, and if we can say that they are a cause of this current conflict, and they have had so many Security Council's resolutions, as we know, throughout the years, they're having them nonstop through the weeks, and it seems that the...
It is important to talk. It is important to talk. But at least it's important to talk. It is important to talk, though.
Sure. But it's this cycle that's been going on and on and on. I mean, do you think the cycle is ever going to be broken? And that
I don't think the cycle has been broken. This is the worst genocide since the Nakba, the original Nakba, when hundreds of thousands were displaced.
What do you think, then, should be the solution? How do you see it panning out in your eyes?
Urgently right now... It's up to Security Council members, Russia and China, to send hospital ships off the coast of Gaza in an attempt to try and treat these thousands of wounded women and children and men, civilians. They've got to do that and then just call the bluff off the United States, France and Britain, the other Security Council members, to blow the Russian and Chinese hospital ships up. We know who is on the side of justice and who isn't in this. There is no, as John Pilger, the great one of the great journalists of history said, there is no two sidesism that is applicable when you have the greatest, most powerful militaries attacking defenseless 3-year-olds and 4-year-old children and targeting blocks of flats in a besieged strip, which is just 5 miles wide. And they keep saying, oh, have you noticed on NATO nation media, they go, oh, they've been told to evacuate to the north. Oh, they've been told to evacuate to the south. Now they're going to bomb the south. It's only 5 miles wide.
Beyond that, this is, we're just talking about the fighting right now. But of course, there could be a ceasefire and there will be further fighting in the future if the whole issue is not sorted out. What do you propose is the solution?
The complete solution. Well, I think it's come at a terrible time for the Palestinians, isn't it? That at that UN Security Council meeting today, Monday, there isn't a powerful bloc there who's willing to militarily compete with what the United States, Britain, and the European Union are doing to all these thousands of children as they're slaughtered. I noticed, other things are happening on Monday, and I'm sure this is going to reoccur through the week, this terrible shadow that hangs over all of humanity right now.
Let's go back to some of these points later on, because I'm sure you pick it up. I'm sure people want to know what also is happening on Monday. And one actually is for the so-called Big Pharma. The US Supreme Court will be hearing arguments in the Harrington versus Purdue Pharma case about the settlement for victims who overdosed on the opioid OxyContin, which we know about. Purdue Pharma, of course, doesn't exist anymore, and it was owned by the Sackler family, and that was the company that produced the OxyContin that is said to have killed several thousand Americans who became addicted to opioids.
Was it several thousand, several tens of thousands, or several hundreds of thousands?
200,000 is said to have been killed in the opioid crisis.
200,000 killed by the Sackler family. We shouldn't blame that family, by the way, because they're all regulatory systems that were contributing to that too, and all the art galleries taking all the cash from the Sackler family. You remember all those art galleries saying the Sackler wing, the Tate in London, and mass killing.
The whole thing about this really is very rich people getting away with the stuff is the crux of it, which is always the case, really. We obviously know there's a problem, I think, with U.S. regulation in the medical field. I mean, we've seen that. I don't know if
it
you
was
saw
corrupt. A page. It was corrupt. Did you see the dramatic reconstructions of it? Brilliantly made by some TV companies and film companies.
Pain Hustlers, which came out with Emily Blunt, I believe, a few weeks ago, on the issue. And you see how salesmen just walk into doctor's surgeries and basically say, I've got this drug, this amazing drug, like it will cure all your patients. Will you buy the drug? And it's up to the doctors to basically say yes or no. Salesmen walking
in the poorest areas, in the poorest areas of the United States. I saw Dope Sick actually. But yeah, clearly this is a microcosm of U.S. society. Everyone talks about corruption in developing world countries, in Africa or Southeast Asia or Latin America. The real hardest, most horrific corruption, in this case killing hundreds of thousands of people, is in the United States. What corruption scandal have you heard of anywhere in recent years where 100,000, 200,000 of working class people in mining towns and so on have all been killed by essentially they were bribing the sales agents, weren't they, they got better commissions when they used to sell it.
Yeah, I mean, I think even the United States government know that there's an issue surrounding the regulation of medical supplies there and how they come into being distributed around the country. But we'll go on to a bit on
Joe Biden's son does, definitely.
Yeah, we'll get on to all these.
Well, laptop pictures of Joe Biden's son. Yeah, he knows all about it.
Oh, from Rudy Giuliani.
It wasn't fentanyl. It wasn't fentanyl, of course. What was it? Heroin. I think it was heroin.
Leading on from this story.
By the way, sorry to interrupt, but what happened to the cocaine in the White House? Talking of this. Anyway, go on.
Cocaine in the White House.
Remember all that cocaine was found in the White House, and the White House authorities said they were going to do an investigation as to why this security alert had been triggered by finding the white powder, which they thought was a terror attack initially before they find, and people then suspected it was Joe Biden's son. What? Anyway, go on.
I know. Well, he's obviously indicted. Hunter Biden, you're talking about.
That's right, because I know James Biden comes up later in the week.
Gun charge, I think he's currently indicted. Yeah, but we'll get onto that later on. But also on Monday, leading on from this case, actually, on the same day, the World Health Organization's intergovernmental negotiating body, which sounds very fancy, so clearly they must know what they're talking about, they're resuming negotiations in Geneva to form an international pandemic accord, which is meant to protect the world against future pandemics. And that will be going on until Wednesday.
I don't have it as written as that. I mean, obviously, we still don't know about the US-backed Wuhan lab in China. Yeah. But I have this is to create the next pandemic, isn't it? The WHO in Geneva. It's called Global Pandemic Accord. It's not called Global Anti-Pandemic Accord. It's called Global Pandemic Accord, presumably to...
Oh, so it sounds like it's how to cause a pandemic.
Well, it's unclear, isn't it? I mean, let's
hope... Also, you can't have a global pandemic. It's just a pandemic.
It's just... Why? How? What else is it?
Well, exactly. It's not a pandemic is global.
Just remember... let's see whether I have that... and also, given this goes out on the Pentagon Contractor YouTube, what I have to say about COVID is...
Afshin, you can't say that!
I hope everyone takes their medicine, that their qualified doctors are telling them, but not the medicine that qualified doctors were previously giving to them in terms of OxyContin. Clearly. You know, you finished for Monday because I got a great Monday story.
Oh, I think I might know what this is going to be. What is your Monday story?
No. You first. You finish up on Monday.
You go ahead. What's your Monday story?
The 54th anniversary of the US state assassination of Black Panther leaders Mark Clark and Fred Hampton. Point blank range. One of the greatest, perhaps... future leaders of American civil society, Fred Hampton, killed while he slept beside his pregnant fiancée. I don't know how many gunshots there were. Netflix made a rather good dramatization called The Trial of the Chicago Seven. It's when you find out that U.S. authorities always wipe out charismatic, brilliant individuals that could perhaps have changed the United States into something better in that case, that you were... You realize why we're in such a mess.
So is the FBI who said to have killed him, right, in his sleep?
You said that. I didn't say that.
I'm asking. That's right, isn't it?
You know, the FBI, which Donald Trump he didn't like it much, did he, under James Comey. The FBI under the Trump presidency spent all his time trying to attack the elected president. I mean, what an organization the FBI are. They're G-men. Why were they called G-men? Anyway.
Okay. Well, to give the context, though, on Fred Hampton, he was a member of the Black Panthers, correct?
Yep.
Very violent organization, the Black Panthers, who...
Not half as violent as the American state, thank you very much. They were the most peace-loving...
We're talking about this issue, but the Black Panthers, who had many violent standoffs with police officers,
where they responded. They responded in kind to provocation from U.S. authorities, racist U.S. authorities. Yes.
Okay, but that's the context that we're talking behind the Black Panthers, who are
his memory lives on. His memory lives on and on, and it will be remembered far longer, arguably, than Joe Biden or any of these sorts of characters. We'll know the name Fred Hampton.
Okay. Well, I will say, actually, at the time, FBI director at the time, J. Edgar Hoover, actually said of the group that they were the greatest threat to the internal security of the country. Obviously, I appreciate times have very much moved on since then.
J. Edgar Hoover?
Yeah.
That's the guy that wrote to Martin Luther King Jr. and said, why don't you just kill yourself and save us all the worry?
Yeah. Well, I appreciate time has very much moved on since then, and that wouldn't be the response. Like,
they would
maybe
never kill anyone,
though.
Yeah, the FBI would never kill anyone.
Nor would the CIA, obviously.
Yeah, of course.
But I think we better move on to Tuesday then, actually, which kind of leads on. Obviously, 10 years to the day on Tuesday since Nelson Mandela died. Similar kind of guy, arguably. Obviously, the former South African president who is an anti-apartheid hero for many, and you served...
Was he not for you?
Huh?
I mean, I know. You see, you like Mrs. Thatcher, and Mrs. Thatcher famously called him a terrorist longer than anyone else.
Well, obviously, he was on the US terror list up until 2008, I believe.
But British conservatives used to wear Hang Nelson Mandela T-shirts, famously. Did you wear one?
I'm not
Did
old enough.
Did you wear one? Right.
I think Great. It's one of those things. I think it's one of those things that's very much of the time, and I appreciate
it. No, it isn't. It rings through the ages. It's one of the greatest freedom fighters in all of human history. Nelson Mandela is without doubt that.
Okay, let me make my point. And to say what I was going to say is 27 years he was in jail before he became president. And he was in jail because he was the leader of the African National Congress, which at the time was an anti-apartheid movement whilst there was apartheid in South Africa. And going back to the...
I think they are today, by the way. The president is part of the ANC.
Okay,
it's still anti-apartheid. Well, maybe you're right. That was very clever what you did there. Very clever.
Let's be clear on the context. At the time, they engaged in some violent protesting. I'm not saying that's
violent protesting. They blew up restaurants.
Bombs and all these kinds of things.
Exactly.
So, of course, at the time, you can understand why that was natural with the mindset.
Can you?
Wait,
hang on a minute. They had the majority black population that were being persecuted by the white minority. And if you have a majority on your side, do you really have to be violent to overthrow the white masters? Surely you can just go on a general strike.
I'm not talking about the intricacies of what happened and what was right or wrong and the arguments over that. I'm just talking about, you said he was on the terror watch list by Margaret Thatcher and the US.
And he supported violent struggle, as does the Palestinian resistance, which is why Mandela supported Palestinian resistance more than any world leader, arguably, in shows of solidarity. Especially because the Palestinians helped the anti-apartheid struggle along with the Cubans and the Libyans.
Well, this begs a question, because obviously, people, as we know, have a short memory, and we say the US saw him as a terrorist. They now, along with many people around the world, will be honouring him.
Not just the US, really. NATO countries. The whole of Latin America, then Africa, then Southeast Asia, China and Russia. Russia armed the ANC against the racists.
Yeah, all of that. All of those who will now be honouring him on the anniversary of his death. People have a short memory. They forget what happened that led him to the point that got him to become president and the anti-apartheid movement. Of course, we've moved on from the mindset of the times of the decade.
Have we really? Some people say it's worse for black people in modern South Africa than it was under apartheid in terms of neoliberal levels of inequality.
On an open level, it's not the same kind of person. I'm not saying there are not injustices. Of course, there are. There's still big issues.
It's worse.
Okay, but you can agree that the mindset of people is different now to what it was several decades ago.
You could pay lip service to anti-racism while still being racist.
The question begs, important. I'm just going to say nothing now. Can't get a word in edgeways. I was going to say it begs the question. You mentioned Palestine, that with Nelson Mandela now seen as a hero, who at the time was a violent terrorist organization leader, will in the future Hamas be seen as the heroes? It's a question.
Oh my God, I better get the police.
Bold, is it, maybe?
Yeah, you can pick her up. That address, yeah. Of course, you're not allowed to say what you just said, because there's a range of discourse you're allowed to say, which is October the 7th was when the genocide was had to happen because of what the evil Hamas has done. And that's it. That's all that's allowed. Otherwise, you're an anti-Semite, let alone anything else. Can I get on to this GCC countries thing then, since you don't want to talk about it?
What day is that? Tuesday?
I think it was Tuesday. Yeah, Qatar. Okay, Qatar, which has an office with Hamas in it, and Erdogan might be there.
Erdogan, who has just today said that Benjamin Netanyahu is a war criminal and should be tried for such.
And he's a member of NATO. So if he sends a flotilla like he did before to break the siege of Gaza, and Israel attacks a Turkish ship, Article 5 of NATO would mean that Britain and the United States would have to bomb Israel. Have they thought all this out?
Clearly not as well as you have.
I want to hear what your view is of the Sergei Lavrov. What's that?
Are you going to be meeting with them on Tuesday?
Yeah, of course I am. Are you going to break the siege, the illegal siege? Antonio Guterres should. Sergei Lavrov hosts a gathering in Moscow with the Caspian states, Azerbaijan, Iran, Kazakhstan, Turkmenistan. I mean, the Caspian is the area known not only for oil and gas, but caviar. So, I don't know. Are you going there?
Okay. I don't eat caviar like you, Afshin, so I don't have as much of an interest.
Clearly, Caspian energy reserves, Caspian projects are going to be so crucial and important. And look at the way these things are going on. Big meetings while the Western Europeans and the United States continues to say, come on, Zelensky, you can beat Russia. We can self-sanction. We can sanction. A massive party going on in Moscow for all the Caspian states as they look forward to development and a new world order.
Okay. Well, I'd like to move on to my final story of Tuesday. It's actually International Volunteer Day, specifically International Volunteer Day for Economic and Social Development. And that was mandated by the UN General Assembly in 1985 and was designed to promote, shock horror, volunteerism. So you know what my question is going to be, Afshin? What will you be volunteering to do on this UN-mandated Volunteer Day?
I mean, it's very dangerous during a genocide to have an International Volunteer Day because people will volunteer all around the world for solidarity actions against the NATO-backed Israeli government in the face of all this carnage we're witnessing of civilians. But on the on another matter, what do you mean by volunteering means you're doing something to help people, but you're not getting paid for it.
Yes, I suppose that is what it means.
Well, why aren't they paying?
Such a thing?
What are they going to have healthcare workers say? You know what? Today's International Volunteer Day. Do what you normally do, but don't get paid for it. I think it's a bit...
Okay, so you, just to be clear, you won't be volunteering.
I think the greatest volunteers were those who went for the Spanish Civil War in an attempt to avert World War II. Volunteers are so important, of course, but I'm worried when neoliberal-orientated institutions...
What about the exploitation of volunteers?
Exactly.
That's not what we're talking about, Afshin. I was just asking what you might volunteer to do, but apparently nothing.
Well, no, I was going to say we could make this show way more glamorous if we had the money, or if we don't, we can just have volunteers do all the extra work, can't we? They should volunteer to help us.
So volunteer. Do you volunteer to allow volunteers to help us?
Yeah, exactly.
That's all I needed to know. Wednesday then, Wednesday of the Time Magazine Person of the Year for 2023 will be announced. Now, Afshin, I don't know if you've been nominated for this, but to give you an indication...
Be you. I thought it'd be you.
Oh, well,
Hitler was, after all. Famous Hitler cover when Hitler was a Time Magazine Person of the Year, and so was...
Well, 2022, it was Ukrainian President Zelensky.
Zelensky.
The year before that, it was Elon Musk. The year before that, in 2020, it was Joe Biden and Kamala Harris before... before he officially became president of the United States. And 2019, I was president of them. Both of them.
It's not both personal, of them.
But based on that esteemed lineup, Afshin, who do you think is going to be the 2023 Time Magazine?
Who is that Israeli cabinet minister who said that they should use, revealed, as if we all didn't know, that Israel had nuclear weapons while the rest of the world was arguing about nuclear weapons and Iran all the time in the Middle East? There was a state with nuclear weapons, it seems. And I think the Israeli cabinet minister who confirmed what Mordecai Vanunu, the great Israeli whistleblower, told us about Israel's illegal nuclear weapons program unmonitored by the IAEA. He should be Time Magazine of the Year, and he, of course, said that they should wipe out all Palestinians using nuclear weapons. How about that? In the same train as Joe Biden, after all the mass killing he's done, the mass killing done by Zelensky, the mass killing done by, who's the previous one? Elon Musk was all right, wasn't he?
Zelensky, Musk, Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, and Greta Thunberg.
Oh.
So I suppose if you put Joe Biden on, then maybe Benjamin Netanyahu's next. Or well, his cabinet minister.
People should look it up. I mean, Hitler, that Hitler cover, they can find it online.
Okay.
Why did Time magazine give a person of the year to him? I thought you were going to mention that Wednesday is the anniversary of Hugo Chavez becoming president in Venezuela, even though Britain and the United States recognize some other guy and not Maduro now as the head of Venezuela. And the fact that 6 years since Donald Trump violated all the UN Security Council resolutions and just suddenly said Jerusalem is the capital of Israel, which is plainly not.
Well, Trump as well, didn't he Photoshop an image of himself as the Time magazine?
Yeah, he did, like, didn't he? What was that for, The Apprentice?
Something like that.
Show that he did.
So maybe his time is yet to come.
Now, what do you know about Joe Biden's son, James Biden? I know nothing about this guy.
No, I mean his brother, James Biden. I know that much.
Oh, right. This is that's why they call it the Biden crime family. So this is Joe Biden's brother, James, who will be subpoenaed on Wednesday as part of the Biden impeachment inquiry.
Yes, there'll be a deposition hearing, which he'll be giving. And I believe Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden, who has already been indicted on gun charges, he has also been subpoenaed, as has, I think, several members of his family on this impeachment inquiry case that was brought by the previous U.S. House Speaker, Kevin McCarthy, who, as we know, is no longer there. A stark Trump supporter, I might say, or had been in the past. But I don't know if anything will come of these investigations. Maybe it's just to get
Can he run again? Yeah, a House impeachment inquiry is different to impeachment proceedings. So perhaps it is seen as a bit of a response to the persecution ongoing of Trump, who lost some case just the other day, didn't he, trying to appeal against it. I noticed also Wednesday, a two-day...
Why is it just now the status quo of any U.S. president who comes next?
That's true.
Impeachment trials, impeachment inquiries, it's now just expected if you're to become president of the United States.
There's one against Obama as well. I think that just happens all the time. Washington, two-day Pentagon conference, all in secret, about how the United States is going to go into Ukrainian infrastructure in return for all these billions of dollars that have been poured into the pockets of Zelensky. That's an interesting conference that I'm not invited to.
Oh, I'm not invited either.
I think it's... Is it that
maybe
day
not
that Biden...
influential
enough. Yeah, Biden has 567 leaders from tribes ethnically cleansed by the United States around then?
Well,
Christmassy?
Well, also though, Afshin, I thought you were going to be mentioning that Wednesday is also Finland Independence Day, which marks its declaration of independence from Russia in 1917. And right now,
That was when Churchill and those sorts of people were actively supporting the fascist white Russians against the Bolshevik Revolution. And Finland, of course, would then be later aligned with the Finnish people would be aligned with the Nazis in the Second World War. And of course, today, Finland is now, what is it, part of NATO, is part of the Zelensky war, proxy war?
Yeah, and it's obviously sanctioning.
Dangerous days for Finland.
Yeah, though actually right now, I believe Finland has closed off its borders with Russia because last month, 900, what they said, asylum seekers were coming into Finland, and they've blamed Russia for that. And deliberately in response to the arms that they're sending.
I heard it was Russia saying, we don't want any more of your Nokia phones. Forget it. Remember Nokia phones? You know what happened to Nokia, yeah, which was the biggest phone company anywhere? The Finnish phone company? I think Finland is headed the same way as Nokia. I used to have that ringtone on this thing. I can't do it. No.
I had like the little pink flip phone Motorola.
Yeah. Oh, right. But you know, everyone used to. I mean, Nokia is emblematic of how Finland have completely gone against their own people's futures by aligning themselves with Washington to this extent and the Finnish people's, you know. And we know what happened to Nokia. It's going to happen to Finland unless they change course, especially given the Arctic sea routes that are about to open up because of climate change, which you haven't really discussed, given the COP28.
Yeah, obviously COP28 is still going on. We mentioned that last week. Yes, that is ongoing all throughout the week.
Yeah, but Wednesday is a sustainable food system day.
Okay.
So they're massive pharmaceutical companies, food companies. They're all going to be there, presumably telling us about how they're going to help sustainable food systems at COP28. I mean, clearly, is it? Oh no, they're trying to get us to eat factory-made meat, isn't it, or something?
Oh yeah, because they were proposing meat, that we can still eat meat, but under certain circumstances.
Well, they created in the laboratory.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm all
like,
for that.
You can make lab-created everything now. Lab-created diamonds, lab-created meat. Is it meat if it's lab-created? I don't know. But let's move on to Thursday then. So on Thursday, the US will be holding a national memorial as it's the 82nd anniversary of Japan's attack on Pearl Harbor, the US Navy base in Hawaii, which killed 2,400 Americans.
Is that a false flag? Wait. Pearl Harbor was when Roosevelt kind of knew this was going to happen, was desperately trying to get the United States into the war Germany. So was it kind of false flag, Pearl Harbor?
False flag in what sense? You were saying that he knew that it was
going to
happen?
Well, ahead of time, they kind of thought, well, this could happen. Don't prepare for it, but it's the only way to make the American people get in line with FDR's view that they must get involved in the war on Germany, which in the end was the American, I mean, last week we talked about this on the show, you know, the American involvement perhaps was decisive in Western Europe, but where the real war was being fought in the Far East and in the eastern borders of Europe with Russia, you know, did it make that much difference?
Well, there's a lot of complexities and nuances as to what went on. And some say that the war started off in China and Japan, and that's like a whole different thing. But I will say on this, though, Franklin D. Roosevelt, who was the US president at the time, did say that the 7th of December would be a date that will live in infamy.
Yeah.
And it has done. We are still talking about it now.
Yeah, and people have infamy. Because I say, get that? Because I say, what on earth was the United States doing with a base on Hawaii anyway? Why is it a state of the United States? It's miles away from the rest of the Americas. The people of Hawaii don't want it. As we saw recently with that natural disaster in Hawaii, where all the groups that opposed land reclamation and the destruction of traditional areas of the islands of Hawaii rather than massive hotel complexes for rich tourists. They were somehow disposed of. There was no warning system in place. Why was he overseeing the whole islands of Hawaii anyway? Don't they belong to the indigenous people of Hawaii?
We'll have to have a whole show on whether or not Hawaii should be part of the United States and to what metric any state should be part of the United States.
And whether whether an independent Hawaii could sustain itself just on the sale of shirts.
Sure. Okay, well, also on Thursday then, US Secretary of State Antony Blinken and fresh UK Foreign Secretary and former PM David Cameron will be having their first meeting since Cameron has come back into politics, and there'll be a press conference. Lord Cameron now, I think we have to call him.
Where's this happening?
This is in the United States, I believe. They'll be holding a press conference.
Well, Blinken was only here in Dubai the other day. Why didn't he go via London? He just hates London. He could have met Cameron in London. Why does Cameron have to go all the way to the United States? I don't think Lord Cameron, as he is now, will say what he said when he was Prime Minister of Britain, that Gaza is the biggest open-air prison camp. Do you think he'll say that to Blinken?
Well, actually,
I don't think he'll repeat that again.
Well, you mentioned that. But actually, in an interview that Cameron did with the BBC a couple of weeks ago, I believe, he did actually warn Israel that it will never be secure unless there is long-term safety, security, and stability for the Palestinian people. And he also said the civilian casualties in Gaza are way too high and that Israeli forces must abide by international humanitarian law, which, of course, is maybe rhetoric, but I'm sure you will agree with him in what he says there.
The civilian casualties in Gaza are way too high. So, what is? I don't know. I mean, it's every day there are more. But I mean,
well,
if it was 8,000, how many
children
at the moment? Way too high. So it's like 8,000 with 2,000 small babies. Of course, you can behead them with aerial bombardments, with British weapons, European Union weapons, American weapons, but 3,000, 6,000 children, no. What is he talking about?
Well,
it's way too high. There should be no dead babies with these precision armaments.
I'm sure what he meant. I'm sure he said there shouldn't be any civilian casualties. So I'm sure you agree with much of the sentiment of what he said.
I don't think you'll hear anything from Lord Cameron about the desperate need for a permanent, for a ceasefire immediately, as has been called by the Arab League, including Saudi Arabia, the UAE, and countries of the Global South. I would say Thursday is the anniversary, is the birthday of Lebanese resistance leader Imad Mughniyeh, who was killed in a suspected CIA Mossad bomb when he was visiting Syria. He was one of the people fighting what would become ISIS and Al-Qaeda. Of course, he would be killed by the Israelis because Israel clearly associated with ISIS and Al-Qaeda, helping them, arguably, as they bomb Syria in the past few days, acting as a sort of air force for ISIS and Al-Qaeda, which is trying to overthrow the government of Syria. So it's an important date for that. And I would argue it was a transnational organized crime. But the UN Security Council debating that on Thursday will not even remember him, I think.
Okay. So you're not invited to that one either, I presume?
No, that's true. Why is Ursula von der Leyen in Beijing on Thursday?
Ah, well, for the annual EU-China summit.
Tell me about it, because all the EU seems to do is sanction China. Well, and then they have a party once a year.
Because as of 2023, they are each other's biggest trading partners. So it's, you know, which kind of is interesting to say as to why China has been relatively quiet on a lot of issues surrounding Russia, Ukraine, and Israel. Because I think it, on the quiet, wants to get on with EU and the EU and the US, and you know,
although there was
big
there was some Gaza peace talks, weren't there, held in Beijing? Well, there were some in Moscow, some in Beijing.
On the whole, on the world stage, they've been relatively quiet. Would you agree? We've not heard much from.
I mean, the problem with some members of the Global South is that they think, you know, China has all this weaponry; it's the most powerful economy in terms of. In terms of what's it called again? That other measure of GDP. The fact that China has all this, you can't then expect China. What's that?
Purchase power parity?
Exactly, PPP. So given China has that position, Global South countries cannot expect China to act the way the United States might have done when it defended its more often than not neo-Nazi fascist proxies in the Global South. China clearly doesn't do that. No Palestinian movement can ever expect China to just come in and go, you know what, you're killing thousands of children, enough is enough. Tel Aviv, we will bomb you if you continue to murder all these children. They're not going to come into the war. The only way that anyone's going to come into this war is Russia, if Israel is intent on attacking
into the war, but they can make their comments known, can't they?
Well, they have. They've absolutely called for a ceasefire. They voted at the UN Security Council with Russia for a ceasefire. But, of course, Britain said no ceasefire.
Okay. Well, we better move on to Friday and just...
Oh, not interested in Mercosur.
We've been on Thursday for too long. Hang on.
Okay, but there is the Mercosur in Brazil. So many countries across Latin America and Central America are all meeting. Where have you gone?
I'd thrown away my Friday notes, so I'm just
going to
cut that out. My Friday in front of me. Okay.
Anyway, Mercosur is meeting, although they suspended Venezuela at the orders of Washington, presumably. It'll be an important meeting taking place in Brazil, where all these Latin American and Global South countries, I think $2 trillion of GDP they're worth, really important to see whether they can break off the yoke of the Yankees north of the Rio Grande.
The Yankees? You can't say Yankees anymore.
What are they called? I can't remember what
they're called. Yankees?
And you missed the Aspen Security Forum. And the fact you missed the Security Forum in Aspen, which you can see on Succession, I think, something like it. General Brian Fenton, U.S. Strategic Command Commander. General Anthony Cotton, that's U.S. Special Operations Command Commander, Brian Fenton. U.S. Trade Representative, Catherine. All these important people gather in top secret meetings in Aspen, Colorado, amongst the slopes, to talk about how they can... kill people, destabilize places. We'll never know. We'd love them to come on the Million Afshin show and tell us, because no one knows, because unless you have surveillance, it's all quite secret to find out why they're
all the people are going there, Afshin, then why aren't you going?
Yeah, it's only spies. You'll be going. I'm sure you'll be going, yeah.
So Friday, yes. Now, this is an interesting one. In the UK... Oxfam, what we know of, Sam, the global poverty charity, 500 staff members will, for the first time in the 81-year history, will be going on strike over disputed pay. And that is the British arm of that, the GB arm. They've already rejected a pay rise offer amount. So this is a charity on global poverty that is claiming poverty. And actually, I just want to tell you the poverty that the Oxfam is living in. They've got 25 days plus public holidays, a 33 days holiday.
What is it with you attacking poor little Oxfam that produced great reports?
Afshin, let me tell you the poverty they're in. They've got enhanced sick pay, which increases with length of service. Health cash plan with money towards dental care, eye tests, new glasses, and...
Wait, hang on a minute, Millie. Should they not have...
Let me finish the list of their poverty. They've got shared parental leave, a discount on transport, and... I just think that's actually pretty amazing, and I think I actually just might stop to send my CV to them right now, because compared to a lot of people in the UK, I'd say that's quite a treat to be working at Oxfam. I'd also say I'm sure the people in poverty who benefit from Oxfam will be perfectly happy to suffer for Oxfam to have a day off work to get more pay.
I think that's very unfair. For a start, Oxfam do great reports on poverty all around the world. Secondly, those paying conditions are rubbish compared to the paying conditions of the top 0.001%, who seem to have more democratic power than anyone else in that poor, benighted country of Britain, where I think it was only the other day they explained that the richest person is
Afshin.
Is the Duke of Westminster.
Right.
That's how meritocratic Britain is as a country in any case. I think to target Oxfam when you should be targeting the landed inherited wealth people in Britain that's lorded over the rest of the people in Britain is outrageous.
We know there is a lot of dispute. We know there is disparity in pay.
That
is
true. What do, by the way, these Oxfam guys?
Well, exactly.
These staff members. You mean the people in the shops that sell the charity clothing?
No, these are just the general staff who are both publicly funded by fundraisers and government money. But this is the global poverty charity, and they're going on strike. So all these people who they're helping are going to be suffering because they just want a bit more pay, which I think for a lot of people in the UK who are suffering and can't afford to heat their homes and can't afford to eat tonight would be looking at Oxfam and saying, you know, I would love to.
Two things there. Notice how you're doing this race to the bottom by getting poor Oxfam workers up against people who are homeless. Two homeless people froze to death when we recorded this, as of in the past few hours, one in Manchester in a doorway, because that's the way Britain is. You're trying to create a fight between people from Oxfam and people who are homeless, instead of creating a fight between the Oxfam people, the homeless people, and the people that have 90% of the wealth at the top end of the spectrum. So thirdly, the people in the Oxfam charity shops don't get paid at all. They're volunteers, funnily enough. Well, so these people at Oxfam are probably in the office staff and all of that organization, photocopying and that kind of thing. There shouldn't be charities, of course, because there should be a system of fairness that exists that through social welfare. That means that private charities cannot exist. Although, of course, it's hard within government structures to create the kind of sense of verve that exists with volunteer organizations. Although, as you said, these people aren't volunteers.
Already. You've made your point clear. I've made my point clear.
You made your point that you're basically getting a job at Oxfam. So how will you still... I hope you'll be able to do this every week from inside the job.
I don't want those people who Oxfam charity is about to suffer because Oxfam just want a little bit more pay and a few extra holidays.
In Britain, actually, at the moment. I'll tell you that. I thought you were going to mention 43 years since the murder of John Lennon. That's happening on Friday.
Well, I was about to, actually, Afshin.
What does he mean to you?
Pardon?
What does he mean to you, John Lennon?
I'm not actually a huge Beatles fan. I don't know if that's really controversial. I appreciate their work. I've watched documentaries on them, but I'm not like a fangirl of John Lennon.
They weren't as good as the Velvet Underground. Clearly not as good as the Velvet Underground. Sarkozy on Friday in a Paris court, desperately appealing his conviction for corruption. Sarkozy, that is, who, along with David Cameron, who we mentioned earlier, and Obama, of course, destroyed Africa's richest per capita country, Libya. But, of course, Sarkozy is in the dock trying to appeal not for the fact that he's being put away in prison for life for destroying Libya. It's his own personal corruption case that he's trying to apply for, an appeal for.
Okay, well, that's one to follow.
And Genocide Convention Day.
Genocide Convention. Well, genocide actually comes up. Well, we'll actually get on to Genocide Day. But also on Friday, the other poignant anniversaries I'll just quickly mention. It is 32 years to the day that Russia, Ukraine and Belarus signed an agreement to form the Commonwealth of Independent States after the end of the Soviet Union. Now, see, they could work together once upon a time.
What could have gone wrong? What could have gone wrong? Could it have been Washington policy, perhaps?
But anyway, Saturday then, and before what you were about to mention, I will say that on Saturday, among other things, it's the UN recognized International Anti-Corruption Day to raise awareness of, you guessed it, corruption. And don't know about you, Afshin, but I don't feel like this is just one day is going to really convince anyone to...
No, I think that's it. UN, there'll be no more corruption after Sunday. Or maybe just on that day there's no corruption.
No corruption on Saturday, it will resume as normal on Sunday, is probably the bit.
Exactly.
So no corruption on Saturday, wait till Sunday. And then, of course, at the same time on Saturday is the International Day of Commemoration and Dignity of the Victims of the Crime of Genocide and the Prevention of this Crime. So, in other words, Genocide Awareness Day, which I appreciate is ironic, considering there are a lot of people who consider the killing of Palestinians as genocide. I know you're one of those
what?
People.
No, the Israelis what? Said, I'm not saying it's genocide. The Israelis said, we must kill, how many cabinet ministers came forward, said they're human animals, we must destroy the Palestinians of Gaza. It's an ethnic group. They want to wipe them all out. That's the definition of genocide. But how clever that it's on the same day as corruption, because the corruption of the comprehension of what genocide is occurring in European Union nations, Britain and the United States, to make us not understand what these images of dead babies actually are.
Yes. I'd like to ask you a question, actually, Afshin. Do you think, then, I understand you say Israel is committing genocide, and many people agree with that. I want to ask.
Did you see it from what Israel said?
Do you think Hamas committed genocide on the 7th of October?
Hamas did the October the 7th attack, they had to wipe out the entire Israeli population, was it? The Hamas attack on the October the 7th was, as some of the Thai hostages, some of the Thai captives said upon their release, and they said that October the 7th was justified, was a means of being able to get all those children that Israel, backed by the United States, European Union, Britain, had kept captive or hostage for so many years. It was an attempt at getting captives so that there'd be other captives. That's not genocide. Genocide is going, we see this entire group of Palestinians in this besieged Gaza Strip, wipe out thousands of them by virtue of the fact they are Palestinian.
Sure. I understand that point, and it's a very valid point, and I don't disagree, but I want to say this to you. Ghazi Hamad, who is a member of Hamas's political bureau, he did an interview on October 24th this year with the Lebanese TV channel LBC. He said the following: Israel is a country that has no place on our land. We must remove it because it constitutes a security, military, and political catastrophe to the Arab and Islamic nation. We must teach Israel a lesson, and we will do it twice and three times. We are called a nation of martyrs, and we are proud to sacrifice martyrs. When asked if this meant the complete annihilation of Israel, he replied, yes, of course. Do you think this is the definition of genocide?
Wait. The first part of that was merely a restatement of UN Resolution 242, isn't it? Because Israel has no right in the occupied territories, as decreed by the UN Security Council. I think that's clearly Hamas central headquarters phoning you now. Complain about this LBC. We all know the viewpoint of LBC, Lebanese TV station. Not exactly a friend of the Palestinian movement.
Wait.
So I'm not sure about that second bit, but the first part, Israel has no right to be in the occupied areas, and Palestinians have the right to fight against that, is mandated by the UN Security Council, arguably. The second bit saying Israel has the right to exist, as we know from the changed Hamas charter, Israel de facto agreed to Israel's existence because they believe in the 1967 borders. So, you know. Obviously, the way LBC spun it. Interesting.
Do you agree that Hamas has genocidal tendencies in where they have said they want to annihilate Israel?
When Hamas was created, with the help of Israel, it clearly was set up to be this anti-Semitic religio-nationalist entity, which the Israelis helped create. As a counterweight to the more secular Palestinian Liberation Organization. So clearly it did, because it was created to be this bugbear to split the Palestinian movement.
Right. What I'm really getting at here, now I completely understand I understand Hamas and where it came from. I understand the conditions that led up to the creation of Hamas and why they commit the acts they do. I understand Palestinians have had no rights. They have no agency over their lives. They have no governance. They are stuck. I understand all of those things.
Are you running for elections in the Palestinian Authority or something? Yeah, sorry, go on.
But what I'm trying to get at here, as you say, Israel is committing genocide.
I'm not saying Israel's saying it.
Okay. Yeah, all right, people are saying you kind of are, though. You kind of have been saying
Israel is saying we need to kill all the Arabs in Gaza, according to one cabinet minister after another. That is genocide.
But Hamas has said the same thing about Israel.
No, Hamas has said Israel has no right to exist where it doesn't belong, which is absolutely enshrined in UN resolutions. That's completely different to say Hamas has never said we want to murder all the Jews because they are Jewish of Israel.
They haven't want to get rid of the Israelis. And I just want to actually give you the definition.
Anyway, who cares? The fact that Hamas was part set up by the Israelis kind of means that Hamas is a kind of nebulous resistance movement that has only been helped by Israel and is currently being the best recruitment sergeant for Hamas, and clearly Netanyahu and the Israeli government. So many people want to join Hamas now after seeing what has been happening to Gaza. Their poll ratings in anecdotal poll ratings, and I think some official ones in the West Bank, obviously you can't do polls in Gaza, destroyed as it is, are that Hamas's popularity is going up because the Israelis time and time again have promoted Hamas. Now, if the Israelis have promoted Hamas time and time again, why would they promote an organization that you're suggesting believes in genocide of Israelis? It doesn't make sense.
But I understand that, and I understand growing up as a Palestinian child and seeing all these atrocities committed, and violence really is your only weapon because you have no governance, you can't take part in talks. There's no way out other than violence. I understand that, but we're talking on genocide and on this genocide day. And I think where there is a moral quandary on this, I think is where you have Israeli civilians who they're not the government, they are not the UN, they are not the member states who are part of this issue. They are everyday people like Palestinians. And what I'm
Wait. These Israelis all have to serve in the Israeli army. There's conscription in Israel. They're not ordinary people. Every single Israel, if you have an Israeli identity card, you had to fight in the Israeli army. Therefore, of course, the Palestinian resistance movements are going to say you're a legitimate target. That's the nature of what Israel has done to its society. In Palestine, that's not the case. In Palestine, you don't have to fight, become a fighter for the Palestinian resistance cause. In Israel, you have to become, by being Israeli, someone who supports the illegal occupation of Palestinian lands. That's why resistance groups believe they are all legitimate targets, obviously excluding children. Although, as we now know, children were murdered by the Israeli helicopter gunship. And of course, there is a growing majority. There is a growing number of Israelis that are opposed to their government's policies.
What are you saying from that? Because it sounded to me like you're saying, therefore, that all Israelis are bad. Is that what you're saying?
No, we're going back to what Nelson Mandela said when he blew up white South Africans. Mandela blew up white children and white South Africans, not because he believed in genocide against white people, but he believed that in the guerrilla warfare struggle, there was a need for violence that would eventually get some kind of peace negotiation, peace process started to end apartheid. Similarly,
I understand that, Afshin. I understand violence can be necessary to for these good things to
happen. Every single Israeli over the age of 18,
okay.
Conscription.
But the
resistance groups would see them as complicit.
Right. Here's a question then, because this is really important. Do you think that Israeli civilians are deserving of the atrocities that have been committed by Hamas? Do you think...
Are you asking me whether I can remember Hamas? What are you, like, Piers Morgan now? No, what do you mean? What's an Israeli civilian if they've all had to be in the army?
An innocent Israeli who maybe doesn't have any huge opinion
which
on
Israeli,
the
Israeli... Wait. So this is a country that was invented in the 40s, and they are occupying land in violation of one UN Security Council resolution after another. That's the Israeli state. At the moment, 2% of the Israeli population, from recent polls, are opposed to the operations in Gaza. That's 98%, according to recent polling, back the slaughter of thousands and thousands of children. They say that isn't too much. They were asked explicitly, is it too much? So if a country thinks 98% of that country believes that the slaughter is okay, and that everyone over the age of 18 has had to serve in the IDF, with some great honorable exceptions of those who conscientiously object to serving an army presiding over violation of UN Security Council resolutions, then what is Israel? But again, is it genocide? Is Israel the same thing as saying Arab? Because Israeli politicians say, wipe out the Arabs. And wiping out Arabs, that phrase, is genocidal. And that's why what we're seeing is genocide, according to what Israelis are saying. That's the point I'm making.
Okay. But first of all, you've got to remember, and I agree with you firstly on all of those points.
I agree with anything.
I'm saying on the points that you've just made, I agree with those and I understand the perspective, but you've also got to understand that when you talk about Israelis like this, that there are ordinary people who don't really have anything to
That's
do
That's the 92% I was just saying. No, Millie, because that's the 98% who back the slaughter. Those are the ordinary Israelis, right? The ordinary Israelis are the 98% who back the slaughter of children. That's the ordinary Israelis.
Let's consider for a moment the position of the Israelis. And it's difficult because I know, you know, we've spent most of our lives in Britain. You know, I don't really understand the plight. I don't
Wait. 98% think like that, but there has to be a way forward where there's going to be some kind of talking.
Can you understand why? As an Israeli, in 1947, it became Israel, as we know, right? The people, the UN, the member states, whoever decided that back then and imposed their will onto an Arab nation, we know that. The people around today, the Israelis who are around now, from
they're all from Europe and South Africa. They're not from the Middle East. They're all from South Africa.
Whoever they are. They've grown up understanding what their families went through. They have understood that Jewish people have been persecuted for centuries. They have been told that their parents, their immediate family have been killed
in Europe. They were persecuted in Europe, not by poor Palestinians loved them.
I'm not talking about Palestinians. Oh my God, why is that happening?
By Palestinians.
It doesn't matter who did it. It's not by Palestinians.
You should blame someone else then.
No, I'm saying from the Israeli perspective, you have grown up understanding that you are a persecuted, come from a group of persecuted people, right? That's your understanding. You're in a country that from you found yourself in a circumstance where you are in Israel, and that had nothing to do with you because the people around today weren't party to that decision. And you are experiencing Hamas, Palestinians who are causing a rocket fire into Israel. They have perhaps had their own families who have died. And from their perspective, from what they're being told is the Palestinians are evil, Hamas is evil, there are terrorists who are trying to kill their families.
No, I get all that. That's exactly the same. We're back to South Africa. We're back to South Africa, though.
Really, we're back to... say when it comes to the individuals on each side that there's all evil, there's all good or all bad. When it comes to the whole situation, is there a right and wrong?
Yes, there absolutely is. And it's exactly like a South Africa. It's exactly like
this
South Africa situation. The white Boers, the Boers in South Africa and the children of those white Boers in South Africa who had been persecuted from the first concentration camps, which Churchill started against the whites in South Africa, they felt they were always persecuted and then would persecute the black South African indigenous population of South Africa. And they grew up thinking, why is Nelson Mandela blowing up my local restaurant? But there is a wrong and right here. The whites were wrong.
There is.
And Nelson Mandela's people were right. Similarly, in Palestine, those young Israelis who were being brought up to think, oh, why is this rocket fire coming in from Gaza? We must hate them. They're wrong because it's their fault.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the right and the wrong happens, according to UN resolutions. Yeah, that's what right I keep going down to. It is to do with international law and UN resolutions we're talking about. It's not my view that those settlers are wrong. They are illegally occupying other people's lands, and illegally putting siege walls and besieging millions of men, women, and children and destroying their lives and now killing them.
Ashton, I don't disagree with you on this. I understand what you're saying, and I'm not talking about it on that level. On that level, yes, there is a right and a wrong. I'm talking on the individual level.
You keep saying that. What do you think should happen to those individuals? Because clearly Mandela would say, unless you can persuade them otherwise, they should be killed. That was the Mandela doctrine.
Do the Israeli civilians, let's call them civilians for the sake of argument, have any more right to die than the innocent Palestinians?
I don't understand what you mean. There's a war on. I really find it difficult to get.
So wait. Genocide.
So in the Second World War, you thought that. You think who has the right to die? Hitler in his bunker or Churchill in his country estate? You're equating all these different things. There's a war on, so there are different sides to the war. In apartheid South Africa, there was Nelson Mandela versus the British and American supported apartheid state. We now all recognize that Mandela was right and the British, American, Europe, Western European support for apartheid was wrong, because between those two sides in the war, the anti-apartheid struggle was important. Similarly, in Palestine, we believe the UN resolutions mandated at the Security Council are right, which means that Israel is wrong.
Okay, so, Israel.
And as for the individuals, if they don't get on board with what the UN Security Council says, we know what happened at Nuremberg and the hangings. Do these people not understand that what they're doing is violating the human rights of millions of Palestinian people? And on an individual basis, they have to change, don't they? And if they don't change, what happens? We saw in South Africa that people can change. To an extent, at least as regards tolerance of the majority black population by the whites in South Africa.
Okay. Well, you've made your point clear. I think let's move on to Sunday, which leads us within the same realm. On Sunday, then, it's International Human Rights Day, which marks, interestingly, 75 years since the UN Declaration of Human Rights in 1948, just a year after the UN plan for Palestine, which, as we have said, is the direct cause of the conflict now, where many would say Palestinians are not being treated as though they have human rights. So it's interesting that the Human Rights Day is coming up amidst all of this. I'm sure you would agree. It's also the Egyptian presidential election will be happening on Sunday. Three really? Days it will take the vote. Yeah,
I completely missed that.
3 days to vote. It'll take 3 days to vote, and the result won't be coming until a little later. But the voting takes place from Sunday. And of course, President Sisi, who is the president now, is expected to win another term. But of course, they've played a large part in the Palestinian-Israeli conflict.
Not that they've closed the canal. They
have the only border that can let aid in or out or Palestinians in and out. So an important election, I'm sure you would agree, in regards to that conflict.
I would say on human rights, though, it's not just human rights of Palestinians, it's human rights of Israelis, because as we said before... Mm-hmm. Young Israelis have no choice. They have to go into the Israeli occupation forces, otherwise they go to jail. That's not very good human rights.
No, absolutely. The whole region and the whole area is party to the to these issues. And the final story then, Ashwin, I have for you is that despite the war, on Sunday, the Nobel Peace Prize will be presented, along with the other Nobel Prizes in literature and science and economics. And last year, I don't know if you remember, Avshin, it was the pro-democracy Belarusian activist Alei Bilyatsky who won, who in response in March this year was sentenced to 10 years in jail. And that's after he won the Nobel Peace Prize.
What for? Why was he sentenced to jail?
For cash smuggling and financing actions and groups that grossly violated public order. So in other words, activism.
Yeah. I mean, when you think about it, Henry Kissinger won the Nobel Prize for Peace. Obama, the butcher of Libya. Obama, the butcher of Libya. Yeah, why did Mandela take one? You see, that's weird too. Mandela was a violent terrorist. How come he got a peace prize? Kissinger, it's absurd. And Obama winning a peace prize, given that he destroyed Africa's richest per capita country. It is clear that the Nobel Peace Prize is something that is awarded to the most despicable people ever on the planet. That's what it is. And as for the prize for literature, Jean-Paul Sartre famously rejected it after winning it, saying, this is not the way to go. You can't have a prize named after the inventor of dynamite, responsible indirectly for the mass murder of hundreds of millions of people. With these prizes,
have you been nominated?
Yeah, you're right. Prize? I'm just jealous. I didn't get any. Yeah, clearly.
Anyway, though, we
let's hope next by next week there's another ceasefire.
Yes. Well, we'll have to keep out for it, won't we? Hopefully there will be some progress. But we better leave it there. Thank you if you've been listening or watching for this long. This has been Forecast News with Millie and Avshin. We deserve a round of applause after that, I think. Please like, subscribe, follow us, leave us a comment, let us know what you think as always. You can watch us on YouTube and any other podcasting platforms, of course. And if we've not been cancelled, as always, or arrested, we will be with you again next Monday. So we'll see you then.